Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CashFly.com. This is Tech News Today for Monday, January 24th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by MailRoute.info. MailRoute is a secure hosted service that provides enterprise-grade virus and spam filtering to companies of any size. Try it right now, absolutely free, at MailRoute.info. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason Howell.
This is the tech news you need today, even if it's the morning. I know a lot of people listen to us the next morning, but we work very hard to scrounge every last ounce of tech news together for you every day. And those efforts are paying off.
How so, Tom?
They're paying off in a new studio that, I don't know if you know, but TWiT has signed the lease on a new studio two blocks up the street. They're over there, started work today. They signed the lease on Friday. And
okay, squeaky clean.
They are actually in the building right now, tearing out walls, tearing out old cubicles, remodeling it for our benefit. What you're seeing on the video version just looks like a window or a floor, but really, there are people in there working, and we were showing it a little in the pre-show.
It's not just the Blair Witch. Yeah. Blair Witch Studio.
There we go. So there's the old cubicles stacked up.
They're one day that will be a studio.
There. That's where our new studio is going to be, in the middle. There's the office space, kitchen, all kinds of stuff. Very excited about that.
Is that a Darren kitchen?
No.
But
we will make it recursive. When we can,
we'll put you in there.
I will be there.
For anyone who's never been to the studio, it looks bigger than it is.
Yeah,
this little room is not that big. So when we all saw the new studio for the first time, it was like, "What would we do with all this extra space?"
Current studio is like what, 5 Sarah Lanes?
Yeah. Well,
new studio will be like 150.
It's like coach, but it's like American Airlines coach, and we're about to go to like first class Virgin, right?
Yes.
We're Emirates. Yeah. We're going Emirates.
We're going Emirates, baby. Except, are we going to get the
flight
attendants?
We would appreciate you not
too?
Smoking, though.
I wish.
Let's get into the tech news. TWiT has some ad prospects, according to eMarketer. eMarketer thinks that TWiT will sell $150 million worth of promoted tweets and promoted trends next year. And they think that it's going to only go up from there. So All of these years, we've been wondering, how is TWiT going to make money?
Right.
It looks like this will work.
I mean, what did they at the end of 2010, they came out at what? Like a $40 million profit? Because they introduced who to follow suggestions and trend suggestions, which are clearly marked promoted, and they hang out at the top.
Yeah, those are
and right now, my suggestion is Target.
So Target,
I want to follow Target.
To be showing up in your suggested
right. And if I say, no, I don't, I mean, I can close it. I don't have to be annoyed by it forever. MB tweet race is the promoted tweet for me right now. I have to say, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not paying any attention to this stuff. I mean, this is not effective marketing as far as I'm concerned at all. I don't know who's paying for it.
Well,
I know who's paying for it. I don't know why they are.
As long as they have enough money to pay for the servers and keep those up, because knock on wood, we haven't had too much fail whale lately.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, I don't click on any of those ads. I don't follow any of those. But it's like spam. You don't ever do those either, but they sure pay off. I think TWiT realized, hey, we only need a small percentage of a large audience to do this, to make it valuable to our advertisers. Remember the early bird specials they killed off.
Right.
So I think if this wasn't working for them, they would have axed it.
I agree. And so I guess it's probably a matter of them saying, hey, our inventory is just going to get, you know, more and more companies are coming to us expressing interest in being part of the who to follow or trend advertising model. Then again, they may have aspirations to start doing in-stream advertising. I know they were trying that out with Hootsuite. I haven't heard anything about that besides the initial outrage from people saying, oh, I'm not going to use Hootsuite anymore. I haven't really heard anything one way or another about that. But that's also another possibility. I mean, going from 40 to 150 is quite a jump. I mean, 150
is
still...
In fact, it might beat MySpace. That was one thing...
that just goes to show you how this is not really that big of a...
Matthew Ingram mentioned. He's like, if they made $150 million last year, MySpace is on the way down.
Right.
They could be bigger already.
Well, and people go, well, MySpace, because MySpace has kind of, you know, it's in its... sunset years, we might say. Somebody like Facebook, Darren asked before the show, well, like, what's the comparison? Facebook's like hovering around $4 billion.
Yeah, exactly.
So 150 million is a big jump from 40, but it's not that much for a company of Twitter size.
Well, I mean, Twitter's valued at like $4 billion. I don't know how that stacks up against Facebook, but they definitely want to be the number two in social media.
We're number two. We're number
That's
two.
Not a bad place to be.
Have you all noticed, whenever you see like hotels and airlines and businesses promoting, it's always Facebook and Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They always seem to go together in these promotions.
Well, I think people like to, you know, pick two. And it's like, all right, look, let's just pick the top two. And if that's just what it is in, you know, people's mind share, there you go.
But usually those kind of things are like, let's have a simple message and just pick one.
Hmm.
You know, I think it's interesting that they're like, no, we have to have both.
Bets.
But I think that smart advertisers realize that Facebook and Twitter are two very different things. I mean, Twitter is, I don't want to say it's one dimensional because I don't feel it's that way. But Facebook is, it's a multi-layer experience with all sorts of, there's so many things you can do in your Facebook experience within 5 minutes, where Twitter is more of just catching up.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I don't think that Twitter would ever reach Facebook's revenue numbers, nor would they expect to.
No, I don't think the market expects them to. But they could make plenty of money and stay in business for a long time. Which early on, because they were saying we're not concerned with money, a lot of people were worried that they would never make money because they weren't concerned. I always felt they knew what they were doing, mm-hmm. and they knew that they didn't want to just force a business model on their audience until they could find out how much it annoyed them. Because any advertising model is going to annoy a little bit, and they wanted to annoy at the least amount that they could while still making money, and I think that's what they've figured out.
And also, initially, they just had to take care of their struggling growth. So now that they've got that under wraps, they can really change their focus.
Yeah. We got a couple of new elements from browsers today that allow you not to be tracked online. This is kind of in response, a lot of people think, to the FTC saying they would like to have a national do not track list. Chrome is putting out a browser extension today called Keep My Opt-Outs that remembers the sites you don't want personalized information from, and it actually incorporates a couple of existing opt-out lists created by advertisers into the extension. So it immediately comes with some effectiveness. Firefox is proposing something which is a little more technical. They want to send out a header in HTTP for do not track that would be respected by advertisers and result in you receiving no specialized, no location specific, no cookie based ads. The commonality on both of these is that neither one involves setting a cookie to block cookies. Because that's problematic when you empty your cookies. Then you got to go put your block cookie back in. One is an extension. The other would be built into the browser in the header. But one is here now and is available. And the other is a proposal that all browsers and all websites would have to sign up.
And the proposal is Mozilla's proposal, which seems like if it could be implemented correctly would be the most effective way.
No way. What marketing place do you think is going to respect the...
If implemented correctly, I said if.
Okay.
I didn't say it would
My
point, mm-hmm. if you had let me finish, was I don't think they're going to get anybody to play by their rules.
Yeah, agreed.
So that's the problem that I have with that.
I hear what you're saying. In an ideal world where all the sites sign on, that probably is the most effective way to do it.
At the same time, people... It's important to realize that it's like, well, if you're not going to get targeted ads, then you're going to get ads that might end up annoying you more because they're ridiculous and have no basis on what you buy.
Well, that's the thing, right? Everybody kind of reacts like, oh, I don't want to be tracked. But if you're being tracked with your knowledge and you know exactly what they're getting out of you and you have control of it, being tracked isn't all that bad if you're in control because they can give you relevant stuff. They can give you information you actually might want.
On the other hand, if you don't pay attention to ads at all, does it really matter what they put up there?
You don't see color either, do you?
Right. Or if you're already using one of the various ad blocking plugins and extensions already available for Firefox or Chrome, then this really isn't relevant to you. Or if you're one of those people that has gone as far as to use something like NoScript to protect yourself. But Tom raises his hand. It's kind of a difficult thing to manage, though, let me tell you.
And in Chrome, you have to turn off scripting, which is a little different. Mm. Although there's a few people working on NoScript-like extensions for Chrome. Speaking of Google, Eric Schmidt got paid $100 million for getting side-moded. How would you call it, going from CEO to executive chairman? John Pashevsky over at Digital Daily, All Things D, says he got severance pay. This $100 million of equity that he's now getting is sort of a payoff.
I mean, who knows? Well, some people know. I don't know what Google considers this board position, going from CEO to board position. I mean, clearly he's not going to be CEO anymore. I have known instances where a board seat is sort of a, hey, you're still with the company, wink, wink, everyone's happy, we're all friends here, but you don't really work here anymore.
Right.
That doesn't mean that that's what's happening with Schmidt, but I know that it can be construed that way.
They're saying that's not it. And a lot of people who really follow Google closely say it doesn't seem to be it. These guys are friends and everything.
Yeah.
But the pattern seems to be fitting. We make you executive chairman. We leave you on the board. But we take away all your real power. We give you a $100 million payout. That is usually what you do for a new CEO or a CEO that's leaving.
Or a CEO that, quadrupled, quintupled their yearly revenue over the last 10 years. I mean, it's like, here's the bonus for being the guy who made us so much money. I mean, their revenue model was very, very effective.
Or it could be, we need to pay you out because we know you're not going to be around much because you're taking on a new talk show on CNN.
Or that.
The New York Post says, says that Eric Schmidt filmed a test episode of a talk show for CNN. No idea what the talk show would be about.
Supposedly called Adult Supervision.
Well, that's, I don't know if that's a joke from the New York Post or a part of the leak.
They're suggesting that it might be like Meet the Press.
Now, some folks have said, Eric Schmidt doing a talk show, this doesn't jive with the Eric Schmidt that we know, who's famous for not even being comfortable during photo shoots or having a video camera trained on him. At the same time, he's also gotten a lot of attention for his demeanor and the things that he said. And as the leader of a huge corporation, sometimes that doesn't work out.
Yeah,
but as a talk show host,
it works out great.
The best model.
Right. Yeah, he does say some eccentric things, I go with eccentric, not creepy.
He could call it Schmidt. I just said.
Yeah, that's better than Schmidt. My dad says.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
maybe Eric could have his son on.
You know, in all honesty, though, somebody who is possibly eccentric / creepy, whatever, use your adjective, whichever one works for you, but has a lot to say about, I mean, think of all the interesting topics that Eric Schmidt could wax poetic on that would have been interest at least to all of us.
Well, I don't know. Is anybody going to be interested in a regular daily show where people just sit around and talk about technology topics?
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Dumb idea.
Yeah, no one would do like
take more. Your $100 million.
There's only room for one show like that.
And do something of use.
All right. Let's take a moment and thank our sponsor, MailRoute. MailRoute allows you to be spam-free, whether you're one user or 50,000. It doesn't matter. You edit your MX record, have your mail sent to MailRoute. So if you know how to do that, you're in. If you know somebody who knows how to do that, you're in. Basically, if you host your own domain and get your email on it, though, you need MailRoute to take that spam out for you. It also works with other services like Gmail. I actually use it with Google Apps on the domain for Sabrilliant.com. But I love it. It actually works. It actually takes away the spam and leaves the good stuff. Tom Johnson, the founder and CEO of MailRoute, started one of the very first companies in this market back in 1998 and wrote FrontBridge, which was acquired by Microsoft in 2005 and is still offered as part of Microsoft Exchange. So if you want to try it out for yourself, you don't have to take it from me. Go to MailRoute.info, sign up for the free trial. And if you sign up as a Twit listener to keep it, you'll receive 10% off the life of your account. Small business accounts start at $2 per user per month for 10 users, and individual accounts are $30 per user per year for single users. Visit MailRoute.info and sign up with the email filtering service that I use, as well as Leo. We got more leaks on the PSP2. We should find out about this on Thursday, actually. Sony is having an event in Tokyo, and everybody assumes we're going to hear about the PSP2 there. But according to some leaks, we're going to see a 3G connection in the PSP2 and an OLED screen, which would be pretty sweet looking on that size. That would be some high resolution.
I've got the OLED on my Epic 4G, and the blacks are so good.
Yeah. So a 3G connection built in means that we'll actually be able to download games, whether we're around Wi-Fi or not, which is the way you get the games now on PSP.
So am I totally crazy or... Okay, my question here is, this all sounds great, but aren't they also about to release a PlayStation phone? And how are these two going to be all that different from each other?
Well, the PlayStation phone, probably like the Nokia N-Gage, where you're going to have to talk on it sideways. No, maybe not.
I think so. I think the industry has learned from
you
that.
You think so?
Well, I think there's room for differences. It's like the iPad versus the iPhone. You know,
like an iPod Touch.
iPad can come with a 3G connection built in, but you wouldn't really want to call on it. I think the PSP is designed for gaming. You might be able to make calls on it. In fact, you can make VoIP calls on the Wi-Fi version now.
Right.
But it's not really meant for that.
Flexibility, I guess.
Whereas I think the PlayStation phone is more like, it's a phone first, but you can also play games. This is more a gaming device.
It's a gaming device with a nicer screen. And
really nice.
Well, the thing I'm most curious about it, and it makes sense that it would have 3G connectivity because the whole concept here is that you don't go and buy a physical good. You don't buy a spinning disc to put in it to play a game. You just go ahead and download it. And that, you know, opens up so many possibilities that they can monetize and especially like impulse buys and things like that. Whereas before, if you had to have Wi-Fi to buy something, maybe you're not around when there's Wi-Fi and you want to play some game. It's really interesting to see devices coming out that have 3G connectivity. The first one that really caught my eye was the Kindle because you pretty much bought the Kindle and you had 3G from, I think it was Sprint.
Originally it was from Sprint, yeah.
For life. And we're seeing lots of other devices, not a consumer device, but the prototype CR48 from Google has, you know, 100 megabits a month or megabytes a month of 3G from Verizon. And just the concept of getting a device that has always-on connectivity for a specific purpose, like downloading games. I'm not talking about like browse the web and use this as a PDA or whatever you will, but just to have something where you don't have a monthly service fee and just, hey, when it needs to get on a network to get something.
Do you think that's the way this will be? Will it be built in and limited like the Kindle, but you don't have to pay extra? Or will it be an open connection that you can do almost anything on, but you have to pay an extra $15 a month?
Yeah, if it's another $15 a month thing, absolutely not. I just can't see you having to like, oh, ding me for my 3G connection on my iPad and my 3G connection on my PSP2 and, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's like paying for a 3G connection on all of these different devices. At a certain point, you're just like, okay, look, I'm just going to get a MiFi. Or maybe hopefully in the future, somebody will find a way to put together a 3G plan or 4G plan by then where it's just like, okay, great, for such and such number of devices, you get access and just give us the MAC addresses so they can get on our network and, you know, use our resources and don't have to think about it.
Mm-hmm. The plan is meant for NTT Docomo, according to the leak, which is a Japanese carrier. But if it's there, I'm assuming they'll try to start making deals with other carriers around the world as well.
Then again, it could be, I mean, if they know that this is going to be a hit in Japan, you know, that's a different market. For a lot of devices.
You're right.
So it's kind of like, even if it doesn't work here very well, I mean, you know, I'm asking questions, well, why would you? And does it really make sense to have both? Maybe Japan's their market.
Yeah. Nintendo has confirmed that 3DS content will be locked to a single system. So right now, that is the way the DSi works as well. But the 3DS is going to be no different. You will be able to move your games from the DS to the 3DS. But once they're on the 3DS, you can't move them off, which means if you break your 3DS or if you buy a new 3DS for some reason, you won't be able to get the games off even through the SD card. You'll not be able to move them from one 3DS to another.
Oh, man. They better hope those devices are like rock solid in terms of they're not being, I don't know. Any malfunction in the device and someone's going to say, I call foul. I bought all these games and I didn't ruin this device. You ruined it because there's something wrong with the unit itself. It's just, I don't know. I mean, doesn't just talk about making your customers mad.
Yeah.
If it's under warranty,
I assume that you can call Nintendo and then they'll grandfather you in and allow you to reinstall them. But why not just say, you know what, as long as you can sign in on your Nintendo account and prove you are who you are the way Apple. I mean, this is the way Apple does it. This is the way Android does it. This is the way everybody does it these days. Why are they going so limited by device? I don't understand that at all. It's one of the benefits of DRM is to say, hey, I actually own this everywhere I have a device.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if for some reason, if you buy a new one, to not be able to transfer the games, even if you're not going to play them, you know, you're not trying to get away with anything
but
here.
That's the thing is you don't really own the game. It's not a physical good. It's you know, you own a license. They're letting you use it because they're so kind to you after you gave them all that money. And it's the same problem that, you know, it's the reason why physical books have the one advantage over ebooks, not in size or form factor or anything like that, just licensing. You know, I can give it to you.
But Nintendo is treating this like an arcade where the games are really heavy and you can't move them because you don't have a dolly big enough. That's not the way the world works anymore.
And if I'm buying a license, I'm buying a really restricted license in this case.
Yeah.
Which is like you're not even buying a license to play the game. You're buying a license to only play the game at that arcade.
Absolutely.
That little 3DS.
You're renting it for the lifetime of your unit.
On the opposite side of the world, Microsoft seems to be getting it as far as dealing with hackers. They have taken up with the Chevron WP7 team, the guys who make the original Windows Phone 7 jailbreak. And those guys, although they are under NDA now and can't say a lot, say they're genuinely excited by what Microsoft has in the works for Homebrew. And Microsoft has even said, you know what? When Chevron WP7 breaks under the new update, we're going to work with you to make sure that it works again, that you can modify it. They've also offered GeoHot. George Hotz, the hacker who said he was going to do a jailbreak for Windows Phone 7, they've offered him a Windows Phone. So they're reaching out and saying, hey, you want to jailbreak Windows Phone 7? Fine. Work with us on jailbreaking.
I think that's a really smart move on Microsoft's part.
Do you trust it?
Well, I mean, this is what they have to do because they were, you know, in a market where they're, you know, behind Google and Apple. They have to do what they're known for, and this is how they, you know, succeeded with Windows, and this is how they've succeeded with the Xbox, is just making it an easy to develop for platform and not just going after you know, your traditional developers. But hey, if the hackers are enthusiastic about it, get in with them, because that's what they are. They're developers.
Exactly. It's not even really a question of trust. It's like, no, Microsoft really doesn't care to, you know, make friends with a bunch of people who aren't working for Microsoft, but they know that by doing so, they not only look better, but they get the word out. You know, a lot of folks are excited to be working with them. It proves their reputation. It makes them seem like one of the gang.
Yeah, this is a good PR for them. And this is kind of the stance that they should have had when, you know, just a few months ago when the Kinect hacking started going on. They should have played it that way.
Shadow Guy in the chat room brings up a pertinent question, which is why lock it at all then? Is it because of the manufacturers? Is it because of the carriers? Like, how do you walk that line? It's a very interesting question. If anybody's got some insight out there, I know we have some anonymous employees in the audience. We will protect your identity if you want to explain it to us. I'd love to know, like, what are the real reasons? Is it manufacturer lock? Is it carrier lock? And how are the carriers going to respond if Microsoft's playing along with the Homebrew folks? Interesting to know. Media Defender is one of those companies that pollutes Pirate Bay with tons of fake files.
Why would they do that?
Because they're trying to stop you from pirating.
Oh, right. So they're the folks that say, new Britney song, and I downloaded, and it's not Britney song at all. Right. It's some fake thing.
Madonna was one of the earlier ones to do work in this
area.
Oh, right,
when it was just the hook over and over.
She put actual files out where it started playing her new song and then went into her lecturing you about piracy.
Oh, I only ever got the ones that was just the hook over and over and over.
Anyway, a group of European academics, most of them from Universidad Carlos III de Madrid, presented a paper at the Association of Computing Machinery finding that 25% of the files actually downloaded from Pirate Bay are fakes. So when people are out there actually downloading files, they're hitting the fakes a lot. 30% of the files listed are fakes, but a lot of people thought, well, nobody's gonna download those because they'll know, they'll get the word out, Pirate Bay will remove them. But this paper says, no, actually a quarter of the downloads end up being fakes. Is this the best way to fight piracy? Don't sue your audience.
Poison
pollute
it.
The source.
Well, I will say that back in the day, so this is... Let's call it the heyday of Napster.
Sure.
I was participating rather heavily for research purposes only.
Didn't inhale.
Right. No. Well, I did, but that's a different story. But I was, you know, I was very familiar with files being of bad quality. They weren't the file I thought they were. There was a, you know, infinite loop type of a thing, or, you know, it was, you know, a lot of hits or whatever. And that happens to you enough, and then a paid model comes along like iTunes, and you go, yeah, this is just so much easier.
And I don't even have
as
to...
As long as I'm not being ripped, you know, right, from here to next Sunday.
They don't even have to stop piracy for this to work. They just need to make it uncomfortable.
Yeah. Or just...
That's what worked with you?
Inconvenience.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm being inconvenienced, if I've wasted enough time, and it's like, you know, I can't trust the Pirate Bay. I don't want to do this anymore. I just, there's only so much time I have.
I feel you. You're right. And you can get easily burned by that. But let me just tell you, you can get burned the other way when you're trying to be legit. And you're like, I will buy it from Amazon. I'll buy it from you, Apple. I'll stream it on Netflix. Just, where's the content? And, oh, Caprica season 1.5 is only available on the Pirate Bay.
Most of
Caprica
the
Caprica is a weird example, though, Darren.
Well, whatever the current, whatever the thing is,
yeah,
that you're wasting your time
you
on. In fact, let me just go ahead and say, don't waste your time on that. But yeah,
that's true.
We should point out too that the majority of the fake files that were video came from industry paid vendors like Media Defender, who were advocating, or, you know, who were intentionally polluting the source. Most of the fake files that were software came from malware. They came from people who are out to do no good, and not from software paid companies or anything.
Well,
like
the pirates are very good at innovating, and it's just a matter of time before a dig like model appears or some other system to vet, you know, the content. Mm-hmm. It only takes the first guy to realize that this isn't the actual movie to go and put something in there.
That's why news groups are safer.
Yeah.
On to the news fuse groups. Huawei Technologies has filed a lawsuit against Motorola over transferring intellectual property. Motorola agreed to sell its wireless business to Nokia Siemens last July, and at that point, Huawei pulled out of their deals with Motorola. Now, Huawei wants injunctions stopping Motorola from handing over the IP that they were letting Motorola use to Nokia Siemens, now that Nokia Siemens is going to run that part of the business, or at least stopping the deal until the issues can be resolved.
By now, many of you must have heard of the fateful hang-up perpetrated by one Gail Davis of Orpington in Kent. It seems one of Davis's daughters had downloaded Paper Glider from the Apple App Store, which just so happened to be the 10 billionth download.
Oops.
So when Apple called to congratulate her and present a $10,000 iTunes gift card, Davis hung up saying, not interested, whatever, spammer. VP of iTunes did call her back, and they sorted everything out.
So she did. She is getting the $10,000.
She is getting, yeah, it's deserved. She was just confused.
Check this out. Pope Benedict XVI invites Christians to join social networks, although the holiness himself did not actually bless a single one. He warned not to substitute the virtual world for the real thing, but he also poses that social networks help us be more honest about who we are. He went on to say that in search of sharing for friends, and this the challenge to be authentic and faithful and not give to the illusion of constructing an artificial public profile of oneself. All right, so time to switch my metaverse avatar to something more like human.
Yeah,
now.
Stop faking it. The Pope doesn't like it.
Okay.
Ever wonder how it is that AOL is still around? Well, Ken Aletta of The New Yorker shed some light on that in the latest issue of the magazine. Apparently, 80% of AOL's profits come from AOL's subscription business. That's the dial-up service, which is apparently not needed since 75% of AOL's dial-up subscribers already have another connection or in some other way don't need to be paying. In Aletta's words, quote, older people who have cable or DSL service but don't realize that they need not pay, end quote, are the folks subsidizing AOL's money right now.
Well, Sony's rolled out its Music Unlimited subscription streaming service in France, Germany, Italy, and Spain yesterday. And it's roughly the same deal that launched in the UK last month. So for about €4 a month, you can get a virtual radio station that streams millions of songs to your Sony TVs, Bravia, perhaps. I've got one of those. Blu-ray players or your PS3. €10 upgrades you to a premium plan that lets you select tunes on demand. You can make your own playlist and stuff like that. I don't know.
Good for Europe.
I guess.
They get all that cool stuff.
They get Spotify. They get the Sony network.
The whole Spotify versus Sony thing, it's like,
Competition, choice. It's awesome.
Would you really care what the vendor was as long as it was unlimited music streaming? I mean, really.
If it had the music you wanted.
That's right. Get over here to say it. Anyway, so according to leaked NVIDIA roadmap slides, this spring we should be seeing the Tegra 2 3D architecture, and it's the world's first mobile 3D architecture to support 3D gaming as a mobile device aside from the 3DS. It would allow for audio stereoscopic 3D on displays like, you know, for tablets and smartphones, things of that nature. So the Tegra 3 is listed to come out in fall of 2011 with two quad-core socks or system-on-chips, and it's rumored to be hitting the Galaxy Tab 2. So hopefully that will support
the Galaxy
3D.
Tab 2 would be in 3D.
Ooh.
I don't know. We mentioned last week that Portal 2 for the PS3 will come with access to the PC version via Steam for free. Valve just told Now Gamer that user-created levels will also be cross-platform. The level maker will only be available for the PC games, but console players, Xbox or PS3, will still have access to play user-created levels. Way to break down those walls, Valve.
Yeah.
What nicely up, done. Valve?
Time to trade some WAD files.
It appears Slingbox is now illegal in Japan. Japan what? Broadcasting Corp and five Tokyo-based local TV broadcasting firms have successfully sued the maker of a Slingbox-like device for copyright violations. Japan's Supreme Court overruled lower court decisions that had found the device itself did not infringe copyright. Sad.
Oh, that's just wrong. Is there not another? That's the top court, Supreme Court. Yeah. Like, really? So all the lower courts had sense, and the Supreme Court of Japan gave in to the rich people.
No, you're out of here. We, however, love Slingbox.
I learned from The Social Network that Sean Parker made Napster. What? I always thought it was Sean Fanning.
Me too.
Yeah, me too.
It's actually both of them. But if you watch the movie, it's almost like Sean Parker. Like, there is no Sean Fanning.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sean Parker was on stage at the DLD conference in Munich, Germany yesterday, talking about lots of things, but including his portrayal in The Social Network. And much like Mark Zuckerberg, he said some things about how that's not the way it happened. It's a very good movie, but it's a fiction. You know, and he goes on to say some funny things about how he wishes his life were more like the movie.
Is that... it's not the scene at the end where there's, like, you know, a party and drugs occurring. I kind of wish my life were that cool. I'm a geek from Silicon Valley. And there are no Victoria's Secret models in Silicon Valley. Anyone who's ever been to a club in Silicon Valley should realize that there are no Victoria's Secret. If you walked through the streets of San Francisco with a Victoria's Secret model, there would be people, like, on their hands and knees, at your feet. I mean, this doesn't happen, so...
Wait.
So take offense!
Yeah, I take offense, too.
Sean Parker,
first
what
of
are
all,
you saying?
Darren Kitchen is a Victoria's Secret model.
Or my girlfriend is.
Or
and people do in fact
or
bow
Jason
at your feet
Howell when, certainly tall enough,
and I've definitely seen Victoria's Secret model type people walking around San Francisco and no one is on their hands.
He was talking about Silicon Valley, San Jose. I was there last night.
He said
I
San Francisco,
but he started out saying Silicon Valley. And
Silicon
I'm thinking
Valley
San Jose.
Though I think we can all agree is everybody. I mean, from San Francisco to San Jose and the peninsula in between and some East Bay as
kind
well.
Kind of the whole thing. The
it
whole
is.
Kit and caboodle.
Silicon Valley does not mean Mountain
View. So, okay. Right. Here's the question. Who, after hearing him talk and seeing him on stage, which one do you like? Sean Parker from the movie? Sean Parker from real life?
I like the Justin Timberlake version.
Yeah, he talks
Justin
a lot
Timberlake,
faster.
And that means he can sing and dance. But, I see what Sean Parker was trying to get at is like, hey, I'm not this, like, Hollywood D-bag kind of guy that, you know, I'm...
But then he kind of acted a little D-baggish.
He kind of acted a little D-baggish, and some of that stuff about him is kind of, you know, documented. So...
Yeah.
Take what you will. Maybe it wasn't as exciting of a party as it was in the movie, but...
Yeah. He's like, man, I wish my party had been that good. I mean, it was good, but it wasn't that good.
It wasn't that good.
I'm just sad that no one yelled out, $1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool?
Yeah.
And then see what he said.
Victoria's Secret isn't cool. You know what's cool?
I don't know.
Gucci. I don't know.
Gucci models.
What's cooler than Victoria's
Secret? Yeah, I don't know the next one.
Ice cold, for some reason, is what I want to hear. All right, on to the calendar.
So the Motorola Zoom, if you're wondering when you might be able to get your hot little hands on one, looks like it's going to launch February 17th at Best Buy's at least nationwide. And an update, if you've been hearing that the rumor that the price was going to be about $800, it has since been updated to a rumor of $700. I still think that's high, but it's $100 less than $800.
I think $700 is going to be Wi-Fi only. That's what I think. That's why Best Buy has it. Just a personal theory.
Then it's way too high.
Then it's too high.
Then it's even...
Even more too high.
The New York Times is going to roll out multiple subscription packages next month. Tom and I were debating a little bit about whether this is good or bad for folks. I think it's confusing.
Well, the packages are, if you're a New York Times subscriber, you get everything online for free. If you're not a New York Times subscriber, you'll get a certain number of free stories per month automatically, and then you have to pay for additional access.
Right.
And those access could be online only or could be online and the iPad.
But there's no way to be a full-fledged subscriber without buying the paper model.
No, if you buy the digital package, you're getting everything except the printed version.
Oh, well then my bad. I thought that's why I was arguing with you earlier. You must have just thought I was being difficult. I thought you actually had to buy the paper version in order to get all the extras. And I thought, that is ridiculous. That's such an old-fashioned model.
Forget
how
the dead trees. Come on.
That's what I was saying.
I think they're actually doing this right, which is like, you know what? You're paying us already for the paper. We're going to give you the digital version for free.
Okay.
If you're not paying us for the paper, we'll have a subscription for you where you can just get the digital version.
So I guess in that sense... they're doing the right thing because more options is better, and you don't have to buy. I actually still like the Sunday paper, the New York Times, the big old paper version, but that's just me. You could still do that too, I suppose. Anyway,
I wonder how that
options.
Works. If you subscribe to only the Sunday version of the New York Times, can you only access the website Sunday. On Sunday?
Probably.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I'd love to see them implement that. McDonald's is going to start accepting contactless Visa payments and Oh, contactless. Yeah, no, they don't need a contract. They want you to go to McDonald's. Just much easier than that. Contactless Visa payments in all UK restaurants by the summer. I don't know. I don't go to McDonald's.
Well, and it's only in the UK. How many people in the UK go to McDonald's a lot? Like,
a lot of Americans visiting the UK.
It just means that they can get chips without having to use chip and pin.
Ah, there you go.
Thank you.
We're into the last days.
These are the last days.
Of central IPv4 addresses,
convert.
According to projections by APNIC chief scientist Jeff Houston, IANA's central IPv4 address pool is expected to run out any day now, leaving the internet with a very limited remaining supply of addresses. Black market.
Also, well, there's a lot of talk about starting up a secondary market for IPv4 addresses that aren't being used. And Vince Cerf says, it's my fault. When I figured out, IP back in the 70s, I figured 4.3 billion was a ridiculously high number that no one would ever need. He's like, how was I to know?
Yeah, it's the 650K or 40K.
The lesson is... the biggest number you can think of right now in 10 years will not be enough.
Yeah.
Just keep adding zeros for like a minute. And then you've hit probably the number you should just go with.
Several of the articles I've read have said, but IPv6 won't have a problem because it has this incredibly...
Yeah. Will too.
And it's an unnameable number of IP addresses.
On Tech News Today, episode number 40 billion, we're going to be laughing at this.
Yeah.
And it's going to be Tom's head in a jar.
IPv6 numbers. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm afraid that the world's just going to get gnatted to hell and back, unfortunately.
On to the voicemail. We've got a... I'm sorry. I was distracted by my wife's cackling out in the office.
I hope it's us being funny.
I don't think it's us.
It's probably the dog.
We're that funny right now.
On to the voicemails. 260-TNT show. And we've got a comment on the Netflix queue management.
Hey, I'm a little behind in watching the shows. Love your shows. Keep it up. I was just going to comment on the Netflix apps or the streaming apps removing the ability to add things to your DVD queue. I noticed that on my PS3, I'm glad to know that I'm not the only one experiencing that. You can still find things that are in the library that you can only get on DVD. The only thing that they changed is you can't hit a button to say, add to my DVD queue. That's it.
Well, what good is that?
You can still see it. So I don't understand how this is streamlining their information and making it easier to use and resource intensive and everything else. Like, it doesn't change their resources. It's updating one thing in a database.
When I checked the iPad version of this, it still had the ability to add to your DVD queue, so they haven't updated that yet. Anybody else out there have a PS3 let us know.
I love that.
Because that's just ridiculous.
That's if they're a kick in the face.
Yeah. When I can check it tonight. It just doesn't make sense to remove that one functionality. Then why even make it surface on that platform to begin with? So that you can rate it? Or
that sounds like it's a bug to
it's
me.
One
yeah,
or the
sounds,
other.
Weird.
This does not sound like a slap in the face. It sounds like a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unintentional mistake.
All right. Don't show me what I can't have and then not let me at least order it.
Right.
If you're not going to let me order it, don't show me it at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Either that or the Netflix folks are just really hateful, terrible people.
They're not. They're not. Look, she's getting a call from the Netflix people now.
I love Netflix. I'm a happy Netflix customer. I only use their streaming service. So, you know.
On to the emails, tnt@twit.tv. I won't read this whole email, but we will have it in our show notes from David, who has worked in AT&T's port-in office for 8 years, has a little input about Google Voice. He says when a port order is initiated, the end user contacts the new CLEC they want to be with. That would be your phone company. If I'm currently with AT&T and want to port away, it doesn't make any sense that I would call AT&T. I have to call the company I want to port the number to. So the only sense it makes to contact Google is to give them their $20, which brings me to my second thought. How is Google getting away with charging $20 for this? No carrier could get away with that. In fact, a carrier can't even hold up a port order for a final bill, outstanding balance, or termination charge. Google's not regulated by the FCC and public utility commissions like local exchange carriers are. So legally, maybe they can get away with it. But I'm guessing that that every carrier who is saying they should be regulated like an LEC will use that as ammo. Google charging $20 causing quite a stir amongst the people who do this for a living. Like, wait a minute, I can't charge $20 for you to port your number from AT&T to Sprint. How can Google get away with that? I think this is going to further embattle Google with the telcos. And I don't know if this has something to do with why Google was playing so nice with Verizon over net neutrality, but AT&T has tried to drag Google in front of the FCC before because of Google Voice, and I wouldn't be surprised if this didn't happen again.
I mean, if they're treated like a ISP, or not an ISP, but if they're treated like a carrier, then that just doesn't that change the game for Google? I mean, doesn't that mean that suddenly there's a whole bunch of other regulations that are unbeknownst to us that they have to that could trickle into other Google products because it would be Google the company?
Right.
Like maybe if like there was like if Google Voice was separated out into a separate entity. I just imagine that things get sticky when it becomes
it wouldn't affect the entire company because it's not in their best interest to be a carrier.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, though. At the same time, though, they're also doing all of those Wi-Fi initiatives and you know, the free Wi-Fi in the sky that's sponsored and stuff. So they keep dancing around this whole, like, oh, we just organize the world's information and all that stuff, but we're not a carrier. But then they also do carrier sort of things where is bringing access part of organizing, you know, like
also, making it available? Also, who says that carriers can't be redesigned from the ground up? I mean, a carrier.
Well, that's what Google's been trying. I mean, look at the Nexus One.
But it's like if they can get around being defined as a carrier as we know them, then carriers evolve.
Well, they would suck as a carrier in the way that carriers are. I agree. But if they could just reinvent that, you're right. That would be pretty fantastic. I wonder if there's a way to just get around all of that using the internet as a means rather than the traditional telephone network, which is very similar to what Google Voice is doing. Or even with their, you know, free phone calls for all of 2011 with Google's Gmail voice service. You know, get around the whole, like, regulations. Like, oh, we're not a carrier. But you can do all of those sort of things. Here's your phone number. Here's your, you know, ability to make calls. Here's your only, we're providing Wi-Fi here and there and everywhere. And it's like, but still, we're not a carrier.
Right. Next email. This one comes from Donald Thoreau in Dartmouth, Canada. Nova Scotia?
Yes.
Dear TNT crew, now that Duke Nukem Forever has a ship date, you asked for the next vaporware legend, and I think we've got it. Half-Life 2, Episode 3. The episodic Half-Life games were supposed to come out every 6 months, but we got Part 1 in June 06, Part 2 in October 07, and nothing since. We're all familiar with Valve time, but the delay is now approaching Half-Life 2 levels of craziness.
What do you think, Darren?
I'm going to say the sequel to Daikatana.
Ah, also we received a vote for StarCraft Ghost.
Ooh. All right. down
and and I think the and I think most Blizzard and Valve games probably are contenders.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, thanks everybody for watching. I appreciate you coming along. Don't forget to catch Darren on Hack 5.
We are hacking up a storm, brute forcing, and all sorts of good fun network stuff. Join us for virtualization this week, HAK5.org.
Our website is twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, or give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We will see you tomorrow.